This is Seattle's Morning News. Dave Ross with Heather Bosch is in for Colleen and Chris Sullivan. Here's CBS Senior Business Analyst Jill Schlesinger. I first have to ask you, is New York okay? Because my nephew had to walk through mud on his subway platform. Right? Have you guys drained out yet?
Yeah. Things are much better, but we're going to get another weird flash flood this afternoon, evidently. But this is yet another reason why I just tend to walk everywhere in New York.
Well, just bring your galoshes, I guess. So this new corporate minimum tax that has apparently gotten endorsed worldwide, does that finally solve the problem of how much to tax corporations?
No, first of all, that has not, because it gives you sort of a baseline. But there's still going to be a big issue around the United States Congress and where we go next, because, you know, a minimum corporate tax rate, okay, that's fine, but we need to know what the maximum is. And I think that that's where the real intense effort is going to come from. Remember, corporate taxes were at 35% before the Trump administration, and they went down to 21%. Now the question is, will they go up to 25 to fund some new initiatives or not? I think it's going to be a long battle.
Yeah. So your sense is that the executives are not going to roll over for this?
No.
All right, let's talk about your finances post-COVID. Everything is getting back to normal. I actually went to church last Sunday. Nobody was wearing masks. People were shaking hands again. So what you have advised that people need to essentially take this moment to reassess their finances.
Absolutely. And I think that mid-year is a perfect time to do it, right? So, you know, 6 months down, and also as we are going out and sort of living our lives again, I think there's so much pent-up demand, and there is such a need for people to get out and to socialize, but also they feel like they want to spend some money. We've got more than $2 trillion in savings, excess savings. It's amazing to imagine that. And before you blow it all, I think we just need to be more mindful. We want to make sure that you've got your big three covered, that you've got the emergency reserve fund, you've got that plan to pay down debt, you're putting money into your retirement account, you're getting ready for those student loans to start coming back online after being in forbearance throughout COVID. So all of these things taken together just really point to me as just a refocus before you start doing things. Let's think about what makes sense for you and your family.
So don't just blindly celebrate, huh?
Yeah, exactly. And I am not entirely sure whether people are going to hear this or not, but I'm clear when you are mindful about these things, it's not that you're going to say, I'm never going to spend. You don't have to live like a monk, but you're spending in a way that's consistent with everything else going on in your life. You don't have to have that moment of, why did I do that? And we don't want you to go through that kind of thing.
Maybe people are hanging on to their money in case they have to pay for a ransomware attack. Isn't it your sense that this is out of control? Do you think that President Biden is doing enough to address this?
You know, yes, I think it's out of control. And I think that what has happened is that that the bad guys and gals got ahead of us and our focus. And I think that that's really the big issue. And I think what's been fascinating is that the regulators, especially the regulators that I'm more familiar with, which is kind of more on the banking and Wall Street side, they have been focused on this issue so acutely. They keep asking companies, what are your plans? How are you securing things? And now we actually know that this needs to be a government effort. This is a form of espionage. This is a form of real aggressive behavior. So I think that we are a bit behind the eight ball, and we've got to have some sort of government response to this.
I keep coming back to cryptocurrency, though, because as long as that exists, you're going to have people using it to put the squeeze on people's computers. And once you can't get paid for this anymore, it goes away, right?
I'm not sure it goes away, because maybe it just happens for... I'm not sure that the motivation is money. That's what I can say.
Really?
I'm really not. No. Because, I mean, it's a lot of money, but it's not enough.
I think it's Russia's
money.
Foreign aid program. I think Putin blesses this because this is a way of getting America to basically send money to Russia.
Well, I think that this is really a power play more than it is a monetary goal. I really do. And I think that the issue is not, you know, I could make $5 million or $70 million. It's that I can do it. And that's why I do think that crypto has and digital assets, they're going to, we are going to have to see a real a method where banks, regulators can come together and say, what are we doing with this thing? It gets feels a little bit like the Wild West, right? On the other hand, I am not sure that the motivation of ransomware is to extract money as much as it is to extract fear and to divert our attention away from other matters and to simply show that we can, that they can, rather.
On another issue having nothing to do with high or low finance, as a New Yorker, did you like the whole ranked choice voting thing in the Democratic primary for mayor, or did it confuse people?
It can totally confuse people. There was a lot of conversation around this. You know, listen, I think that change is hard with everybody, and I think that five was too much. I think that if we could have said, if the people really deal very well with threes in my universe, I think that if you said top three, let's go. But I think that, you know, in the future, it'll get easier. We just, you know, sometimes we just complain about things because they're different.
But people are accepting the result. They're not going to storm City Hall.
No. Definitely not going to happen that way.
All right. Don't sleep in the subways.
Don't walk in the pouring rain. I'm okay walking in the pouring rain. But, you know, listen, just go. If you're coming to New York, just know things are getting a lot better. We are opening up and theaters coming back online. So start booking your trips right now.
CBS business analyst Jill Schlesinger. Thanks, Jill.
Take care.
This is Seattle's Morning News. Dave Ross with Heather Bosch and Chris Sullivan. Pfizer is working on a booster to tackle the Delta variant, and not a moment too soon. Let's call in the doctor.
Dr.
Gordon Cohen, MD. And Dr. Cohen, you were telling me that your son had a close encounter with Delta?
Yeah, it's sort of interesting. And by the way, I have permission from the people involved in this discussion to talk about this. One of my sons was going on a trip with his girlfriend. And just prior to them leaving, the girlfriend's roommate got infected with COVID, despite having been fully vaccinated with the Pfizer vaccine. The girlfriend then went and got tested for COVID and was negative, and so off they went. Now, the girlfriend was also fully vaccinated with the vaccine, as are all my sons vaccinated. Mm-hmm. Anyway, they went off on their trip, and 3 days into the trip, they both, on the same day, got sick. And the girlfriend tested positive for COVID, and my son tested negative. And the PCR test, he actually had an entire viral panel, and he tested positive for rhinovirus, which is one of the viruses that cause a common cold. So it's sort of interesting that he got a common cold during the non-cold season while his girlfriend got COVID. Now, it turns out that there was a study published in the Journal of Infectious Disease, actually just in March of this year, that actually shows that human rhinovirus, which is what he had, blocks replication of the coronavirus itself.
What?
That's sort of interesting because it creates a sort of complicated situation for testing, because there's actually a false negative rate with the test. False negative means that you test negative despite having COVID, whereas a false positive means you test positive, but you don't have COVID. The false positive rate is really close to zero. The false negative rate has been reported anywhere between like 10 and 30%. So he tested positive for rhinovirus. We know that he had a strong exposure to coronavirus. Was it possible that the rhinovirus was suppressing the replication of the coronavirus such that the test couldn't pick it up, but he in fact had it?
Now, are you saying that the rhinovirus binds to some of the same receptors that COVID would and acts as almost like an inoculation?
Well, we know that there are virus-virus interactions that take place in epidemiology, especially when it pertains to respiratory infections. So not that it's blocking anything per se, but rather that the presence of the rhinovirus can actually interfere with the replication kinetics of the SARS-CoV-2 virus when you look at it in the cells that line the respiratory tract. Hmm. And that's what they have found in this study out of the UK. But it still represents an interesting dilemma for testing, because if you have somebody that tests positive for the rhinovirus, it's still possible, I guess, that they could have the coronavirus, but it's just that there's not enough coronavirus being
replicated. I see. So the rhinovirus could actually, for purposes of the test anyway, be masking the presence of the coronavirus.
Yeah, bingo. That's exactly right. In the end, he had symptoms for a few days. The problem is the symptoms for a common cold are really almost identical to those for coronavirus, especially in somebody who's not really ill. And being that they're in their 20s, they didn't get that ill, but they certainly were symptomatic. But he was able to get another test on day 7, and it was negative. And according to the CDC guidelines, he could stop his period of quarantine as long as he had a negative test after day 5. And I should note, in the story involving my son and his girlfriend, they both were tested for antibodies, and they both were antibody positive. So the vaccine did work in them. It did create an antibody response, but it just wasn't effective, probably against what represents the Delta variant.
Okay, but they did not have to go to the hospital, right?
No, neither of them had to go to hospital. They weren't that sick. It really was like they had a common cold. It's just interesting that one had rhinovirus and had the same symptoms as the other one who had COVID. And the one who had rhinovirus maybe had both. We don't know for sure based on this problem with testing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if the vaccine is good enough to make COVID no worse than the common cold, that's pretty good in my book, based on the story that Chris Sullivan tells about his encounter with the virus. That's the main thing. You don't want to end up in the hospital.
Right. I mean, they're in their 20s, so they were unlikely to end up in the hospital anyway, and they're both very fit. So they didn't really fall into a category of people who are likely to end up getting very sick. Although people may be getting infected with the Delta variant, if they've been vaccinated, it appears that it's quite effective, 95% effective to be precise is what they're reporting, and keeping people from getting very ill or ending up in the hospital.
I'm glad things worked out okay for your son, Gordon.
Yeah, I just think it's an interesting story for people to hear because, you know, it is going to raise the question about how we handle COVID infections going forward. And, you know, we've been learning on the fly as we go because there's never been anything like this before. So if it can be controlled with a vaccine so that people aren't getting too sick, hopefully that'll be enough and we won't need to have to do anything like we've done so drastic in the past.
Dr. Gordon Cohen, MD. Dr. Cohen, thanks very much.
Thanks, Dave.
Chris, how is your recovery going? You're feeling okay now?
Yeah, reasonably. I still have some lingering long-hauler type heart issues where I still get winded a little bit more than I should, and I get the my resting heart rate is a little heavy or a little faster than it should be. It's up by about 10 to 15 beats per minute, which is unnerving.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, this story kind of reminds me because Holly tested negative. And I tested positive, but she had symptoms. So I mean, if she'd had a common cold, I wonder if, you know, that rhinovirus issue, I'm not sure if that would have applied back in April. Maybe it would have, but it's interesting to find out, you know, how this whole thing works. And yeah, Dr. Cohen is right. We're learning on the fly with this thing and, every case is kind of different. So yeah, I'm not 100%, but I'm definitely feeling a lot better than I was a couple months ago.
Oh, that's good to hear. Dave Ross with Heather Bosch, who's in for Colleen and Chris Sullivan. New York City's Democratic mayoral primary was the biggest use yet of ranked choice voting. Could it be headed to King County? Maybe, but that'll be up to voters. Here's Cairo Radio's Hannah Scott. Good morning.
Good morning, Dave. That's right. So recently, the King County Council had approved 6-3. They approved moving a measure forward that would put it on the ballot. So it would have to be up to the charter amendment. So it would have to go to the King County voters to decide whether or not they wanted to switch to a ranked choice system. Now, this would just be for county elections. So, you know, the county executive, assessor, director of elections, the prosecuting attorney, and the members of the county council, of course. So this was 6-3. It was a proposal that came originally from Jeannie Cole Wells and Guillermo Zahale. And it had a lot of people last week who came out to speak in favor of it.
I believe that ranked choice voting is a simple evolution of how we run our elections that will help deliver the healthy and productive democracy that we need.
Voters can vote their preference without needing to vote strategically. candidates from across the political spectrum, in turn, can run without fear of being labeled a spoiler.
My main reason for support of this ordinance is that I can vote for my favorite candidate. Might not be everybody's favorite, but in the end, most likely my vote is going to count towards the winner. My vote and my voice will be heard.
More equitable representation, less negative campaigning, and increased voter turnout.
Ranked choice voting addresses political polarization and empowers more community members to run for office.
The benefit of this is that independent and minor party candidates will have a fair shot.
Increasing diversity of candidates and valuing community voices.
But there was a handful who came out to speak out against the move.
I think this ordinance is a little rushed and a little prescriptive, and I'd ask that you please slow down and give this a little more time. The big reasons for that are, number one, this is a once in 100 years kind of reform opportunity that we're doing here. I think rushing an ordinance through in 3 weeks is a little fast. Ranked choice voting is one option among many voting reforms. It has serious downsides that have not been discussed or explored.
Ranked choice is better than our current system. However, it's nowhere near as representative as a system called approval voting. Approval voting is much simpler to understand. It's easier to implement. It's more representative, and it works well with or without a primary. St. Louis just adopted approval voting last year, successfully used it this year. But we don't need to rush this. We need to do it right.
So right now, under state law, most cities and counties cannot do this on their own. King County can through this charter amendment process. Earlier this year, though, in the state legislative session, there was also a bill that would have allowed cities and counties to go ahead and move to this ranked choice system. And here's what the Secretary of State's office had to say about it.
Frontline election workers have appreciated the well-earned thank yous for their resolute performance under fire in 2020. Yet such kind regards may ring a bit hollow should the legislature move forward with this entirely new, vaguely drafted and untested election proposal. A proposal directing us to create, learn, secure, implement, document, and teach something entirely new to a skeptical and polarized electorate. But Secretary Wyman believes that our never-ceasing commitment to legally precise, transparent, and welcoming elections will in short time reinforce voter confidence as we continue to deliver traditional, secure, and unassailable elections throughout the year. Make no mistake, maximum voter confidence is essential to every completely successful election. For these reasons and others, Secretary Wyman opposes House Bill 1156.
Now, that bill did not advance, but as we work in two-year cycles in the legislature, it's very good possibility that we'll come back again this year. And it does have a little bit of bipartisan support, so it'll be interesting to watch. For those who don't know, ranked choice voting, it, for the most part, would do away with our primary, which is our top two primary that we use now. And then you get your ballot and you just rank in order. You put your number one pick, your number two pick, your number three pick. And then if a candidate gets 50% or more, they win the election. If not, then you go round by round and kind of whittle it down with whoever has the most votes.
Right. So it's sort of like an automatic runoff. It takes the place of the primary and the general election. Now, approval voting. Would you like to explain that to us?
I don't quite have a solid grasp on that. Do you have a solid grasp on that? Okay, good.
Only because I looked it up on Wikipedia. I had not heard it until just now and it was mentioned, but it's actually pretty interesting. You get a slate of candidates, as you do now, but instead of having to vote for just one, you can vote for as many as you approve. And whichever candidates get the most approval. So it's a way of basically vetoing the people you absolutely don't want in office under any circumstances. So if you could tolerate both candidates, right? Or if there are only two or three of the four or five of the seven, you would check, you know, whatever, however many you are willing to tolerate. And you just tally all the votes up and whoever gets the most wins.
And so, I mean, I think it's an interesting conversation. I don't know, 3 weeks through. So the final vote, by the way, on the King County Council for this will be, I believe, is tomorrow on Tuesday, to advance this again to go to the voters to decide whether we have this system. So, but there are some legitimate concerns about it being pushed through somewhat fast. And then I believe it was Rod Dombowski had some concerns about important conversations that tend to go on in the primary circle that he thought might be eliminated due to this. So some legitimate concerns. Yeah. concerns. I think anything that is more representative can be a good idea, but I think that you're seeing us as a country, various jurisdictions move towards this. I think even in New York, that election, the loser in that contest came out and said, I might have lost, but ranked choice voting is a winner for a lot of others.
Yeah, the thing I liked about it was in the New York election, you saw candidates reluctant to go full-on attack ad mm-hmm. because you might turn off somebody who might have chosen you as their second choice. And so people were actually discouraged from running those stupid attack ads.
And there's, I think, getting rid of that ugliness and those attack ads is one of the most important things that could happen to our election process.
Hannah Scott. Thank you, Hannah.
You bet.
After 20 years of polishing school floors, custodian Tylan Bailey is trading a mop for a cap and gown to pursue his dream of being at the head of the class. CBS's Mark Strassman with your daily dose of kindness brought to you by Heritage Homecraft.
School custodian Tylan Bailey has polished these floors the last 23 years. Now it's his turn to shine.
I want to pursue my dream of being a teacher.
Your dream was to be in the classroom.
Always. Always, always, always wanted to be in the classroom.
With only a high school degree and about to turn 40, he enrolled at Georgia State with students half his age.
Did that hit you?
I'll hear their conversations like, yeah, that's not what I talk about.
Bailey worked days at Hightower Elementary and nights on his homework next to his own four kids. In May, he graduated from college in 3.5 years.
I had a Kool-Aid smile. I had a Kool-Aid smile.
Hightower Elementary had him address its fifth grade graduates.
Always keep your head up no matter what happens.
My message was just be more in life. You just can't sit and wait for the blessing to come to you. I had to go to school to do it, so I always tell them, meet your blessing halfway.
This is your idea of a dream classroom.
Oh, this is the dream classroom.
This fall, he'll start teaching phys ed.
You don't get a classroom this size.
Daring to be more. That's Tylan Bailey's real sparkle. Mark Strassman, CBS News, Doraville, Georgia.
I love that he talked with the fifth graders. What a great example for them.
Here is G. Scott. My sources tell me that you were just glued to your streaming feed of the Richard Branson joyride.
Glued to the TV. It was a big moment. One that, for me, got soured by opening up social media and even talking to some of those close to me. And, well, what you're talking about is Richard Branson and the Virgin Galactic that was made that successful trip to the edge of space yesterday. And, of course, as I thought was amazing, I thought it was fantastic. I'm glad that everyone was safe and they were able to get back. But the fact that a lot of people didn't like it. A lot of people are upset because billionaires can be handling more things here, and we have problems here on Earth. And I was just, I'm not confused, but I'm just more understanding, right? I'm understanding that, boy, I get it. Look, people are mad at billionaires. I get it. Billionaires could do more. I get it. Billionaires pay a lesser tax rate. I'm someone who's constantly talking about that. But at the same time, I just don't understand how for just one second you can't put that to the side to see how big this is. Like, for an example, I'm sure in 1903, right? I'm sure when Orville and Wilbur Wright decided to fly a plane, you know, I'm sure they had money. I'm sure they had money to be able to do all those things, the successful deal that they did. They flew an airplane for 12 seconds. That's how long the first flight lasted, for 12 seconds. And then we know where we are today with planes. So all I'm saying is I think that this is bigger than people want to admit. Sure, folks want to be angry about them being billionaires and billionaires not doing enough for the United States and for this world. Fair, fine. But can't we talk about both? Can't both be true? Right? So
sure.
That's my biggest
thing. Well, I mean, if you look, these guys also give a lot of money to various causes people would agree are more focused on helping people who are down and out than space travel is. But at the same time, what's wrong with giving jobs to rocket scientists? I mean, you know, money is always paid to somebody. Nobody just buries money in the ground somewhere and lets it rot. Every time money changes hands, the people who receive the money are free to give it to the poor if they want to. What I like about this approach is that they haven't really broken new ground. I mean, as a kid, I was a big fan of the X-15, which was the same thing. It was a rocket plane dropped from a B-52, and it went to the edge of space. So this is sort of well-plowed ground. But they're doing it a lot more cheaply. And the idea that you can finance this by selling seats takes the burden off the taxpayers. I mean, this is just more money from people who have it, essentially financing research into more efficient space travel on their own dime instead of the taxpayers.
No doubt. I even went deeper into discussion, and I debated if I should go that deep here on you guys' show right now, this early in the morning. But look at the possibility of how people can think, the possibility of thinking bigger. I believe a lot of problems that we have in our country is people only look at the right now. They don't try to look and think bigger. The same way I'm quite sure there are people who don't want people 100 years from now to be dealing with what we're dealing with today. The same way people 100 years from before, right, didn't want us dealing with what they were dealing with. And things are better than they were 100 years ago. We're not dealing what they were dealing with 100 years ago. And so the point is that this here, this is another step. And I hope some of those people who made that journey that are really rich and they have all this money, what if they make that journey and it changes their perspective? What if they come back with a deeper, more profound perspective towards life to help even more, right? Because sometimes I think when we are all in just our own neighborhoods and our own communities, it's hard to see maybe what's going on in other states or in other countries. Well, this is an opportunity where somebody's going up and coming down and like, whoa. So I it's hard for me to understand how nobody can see anything past, oh, it's just a bunch of billionaires with a bunch of money. Sure, fine. That's fair. But don't you like the possibility of the idea of this being kind of a norm going forward? I don't know if we're going to see it in our lifetime. Probably not. But again, this is an opportunity for us as a society to think bigger. I don't know. That's me.
Well, that makes sense to me. I hear that when you go that far into space and you look down at the world and you see just how thin the biosphere is, you come back with a new appreciation for how important it is to protect it.
Imagine going up, getting up that high and coming down and seeing Earth for what it is and just being like, man, just think, there's people down there that's arguing about who's left and who's right.
Yep.
What? What?
Yeah, it does add some perspective.
A little bit more perspective.
Hey, would you go, by the way?
No.
If you had the dough, would you go?
No. As a matter of fact, I'm going to take this time to, no, you go first. No, you go ahead. By all means. No, you go ahead and go. Hey, look here, man. I'm barely able to get on planes and fly regular. I ain't still a fan of that. And when I was watching yesterday, I was standing up and like nervous, and especially when it shot off, and I'm like, oh, and it got, and I'm like, oh, it got real, because it was like
when they light that sucker, there's quite a jolt from what I understand, and there is no flotation device under your seat in the unlikely event of a water landing.
Right? I mean, when it was at 45,000 is one thing, but then it went, phew! I said, my goodness.
G. Scott with Ursula, 9 o'clock, right here on Cairo Radio. Thanks, G. Two very damaging local fires, which are now being investigated as arsons. Here is Cairo Radio's Hannah Scott. Hannah.
Yeah, Dave, this is really, really just devastating. The first fire, this happened on Saturday at the Hanover Apartments off 192nd and SeaTac, an 80-unit apartment building, and it's just, it's a loss. It's all gone. Very, very scary. There had to be multiple rescues. 4 people, in fact, badly hurt, fighting to survive at Harborview. And now the word that there was someone who was arrested for arson who actually lived in the building. The people there are just devastated.
I mean, the fire was already right there.
Yeah, it was right there. And it didn't take long.
No.
Old building like this, it went up pretty fast. Went up really fast.
No phone. Everything.
Sprinklers, and when it lit,
we didn't even hear any alarms. No smoke alarms, no fire alarms, no nothing.
We just
Nothing.
Fire.
It was chaos.
It was just fire.
All of a sudden.
Yeah, it was like a flame because it was just fire. It's all you heard.
Fire's in the center of the building, so it traveled both directions.
And so scary that this went out into the parking lot and destroyed many vehicles that people couldn't move in time. Fortunate that so far no loss of life. Again, though, four people badly, badly hurt in that fire. And now we had word of this fire last week in White Center. It took out a whole row of businesses in a kind of a strip mall area there and with the area's first ever LGBTQ bar. The lumberyard that was believed to be where it started. And originally they said this was an accident. Now they say it was arson. Cairo 7 TV talked to the people there.
I can't even express it in words. Like when I saw that arson sign, I was...
The whole block is going to be done for now because they're not going to rebuild this. White Center is done.
I was just hoping it was like some sort of wiring accident or something. But once I saw that arson sign, I was like, oh my God, this is deeper than that.
And it just stems from hate. I can't understand that, you know.
There's no reason for hate. There's just no reason. That's why we're down here. We love this area. We love these people.
And that is just very, very devastating. Not a lot of information on why they now have determined that that's arson, who they might be looking for. Again, in the first fire at the apartment building in SeaTac, they do have someone in custody.
Okay, so they have a suspect there who lived there, and we didn't know what the motivation was.
No, nothing yet. Nothing yet.
And why were there no fire? I understand the building was built before there was a sprinkler requirement, but I thought that before you can rent anybody an apartment, it's got to have a fire alarm in it.
And it does have to. So, and they said they didn't hear the fire alarm. So I don't know if it was malfunctioning. I know having lived in apartments for a long time, I used to be very bad about this. You know, I'd turn on my oven and it would go off all the time. So I had 3-4 years that I lived without my batteries in my smoke alarm. Anything like that could have happened, but it sounds like theirs was hooked up. So that'll be part of the investigation. You're right though. You can't rent to people in a big building like that without having those in. They have to be in there as part of the code.
Hannah Scott. Thank you, Hannah.
You bet.
Thanks for listening to Seattle's Morning News. I'm Dave Ross.
And I'm Colleen O'Brien. Thanks for listening to the show's podcast. We're happy you're here.
And you can keep up with the show and find some of the stories from today online at MyNorthWest.com.